Good morning, everyone. Today we're going to study Mitzvah Kuf Yud Aleph, Mitzvah 111, Shelo Lecho Velishtos Tikrovis Avodah Zarah. Not to eat or drink things that were sacrificed to idol worship. Shelo Lecho Velishtos Tikrovis Avodah Zarah. Not to eat or drink anything that was sacrificed to Avodah Zarah or derive benefit from it really in any way. Not just eating and drinking, that's just the most common, because the normal things that are offered to Avodah Zarah, it's those things that the deity, so to speak, eats or drinks. So, therefore, it's expressed here in the language of eating or drinking. The Parsha tells us, actually, that we read just yesterday, Parsha's Kisisa. It says that you shall not make a covenant with the inhabitants of the land. And they will sacrifice to their gods, and they'll call to you, and you'll eat from their sacrifices. So therefore, the Torah tells us that we're not allowed to eat from the sacrifices of those who sacrifice other gods. So therefore, not to eat anything that's sacrificed to other deities. Mishor she'a mitzvah. The reasoning for the mitzvah, harchik u'asale kol inyan avodah zarah v'chol davar hamiyuchas eleha, to make far and to get rid of any idea of avodah zarah and anything that is relevant to it, mibein einenu imachashavtenu, from between our eyes, metaphorically. We shouldn't have our mind on it at all, and from our thoughts. We'll be so richuk avodah zarah kosavnu lemala mashiyodanu bo. That's obvious why we have to get rid of any thought of avodah zarah, because avodah zarah is really bad. And at a certain point in history, it was really tempting, so we had to get everything out of our thoughts about avodah zarah. Midinei ha-mitzvah, the lochos of the mitzvah, ma'ashamar zichronam levracha, shekol davar shasu menu tikroves avodah zarah, anything that is made sacrifice to avodah zarah, asur, is forbidden, afilu ma'im u'melach, even something like water or salt, that if you bring water or salt into a temple of avodah zarah and you put it in front of the statue, so you might think that's not, they're not offering it to the statue, it's for some other purpose, it's really insignificant, why would you offer that as a sacrifice? But even so, even if you do find water or salt in front of a statue or other type of false deity, then you're not allowed to eat that water or drink that salt. Shekolomar shafalpi shemayim u'melachim dvarim kalim, that these are not such significant things. Why would you worship? Why would you worship your deity by offering it water or salt? You give it something more chashav. Ef shelomar b'hem she'enon l'tikroves, shelomar shafalpi shemayim u'melach, heim dvarim you didn't put it in front of the Avodah Zarah in order to honor it at all. Still, you're not allowed to eat it. So even if it's not something edible even, obviously the most famous issue that revolving around Tikrovas Avodah Zarah in recent year was the issue of the Sheitlach, that there was hair being imported from India, and there was a question as to whether the hair was cut in some sort of ceremony in a pagan temple, but the question is exactly what the hair was. It a gift to the temple? But if the hair was actually cut in service to the deity, then that hair is actually asur v'hana. It's absolutely not to have any benefit from it, certainly not to wear it. It's certainly a very big benefit. With the hair,
that would be the case. What? With the hair. The hair itself is, I mean, they would. My understanding was that they would cut their hair in preparation, you know, for doing the worship. It was part of the thing. They were supposed to have their hair cut, which weren't supposed to, you know.
Yeah, but that's not the grovus.
Yeah, right.
It's not the grovus. Right, so, famously, Rav Elyoshev came out with a psak based on, I mean, he didn't go to India to investigate, but someone went to India for him to investigate, and based on the information that this other rabbi presented to him, he passed again, that was the grovus of Avodah Zarah. So there were a lot of, it was very interesting, because there were a few days there before all the women could get new shetels, that you will have looked in Lakewood or all these places, and the women would all be wearing hats or tifels or whatever, which is very unusual. And in communities like that, it's bedavka, they wear shetels because they think it's more nechubad or something. Yeah, say that a lot, that some people who really investigated what this worship is all about and know more about Hinduism and things like that, those people in general, I find, again, I have no personal opinion on the matter, I haven't fully investigated it myself, but in general, those people actually do say that it's not the Grovus of Odozar, and it's actually Motor. But there was a whole period where people didn't really know what to do, so they had to investigate either where the hair in their wigs came from, or they had to get new ones. So they had wig burnings. It was very lebedik when this whole thing first came out. So the sages also forbade, in because of this general theme that we want to get Avodah Zarah as far away from us as possible, kol yayin shel goyim afal pi shelo yodanu bo shenischul avodah zarah, any wine that's of Gentile provenance, even if we don't know if they poured it for, they libated it for avodah zarah or not. Afal pi chen, I'm sorry, Hua Nikra Lehem Stamienam. That's called Stamienam, just plain Goyisha wine is called Stamienam, as opposed to Yeinesech, which is wine that you knew that the Gentiles worshipped Avodah Zarah with. Elash Chilku Zichronim Levracha Bein HaNisach B'Yadua L'Stamienam. There are different halachas between if you know that for sure it was poured before the Avodah Zarah, if it was just Stam of Gentile provenance. She'Yadua Yisuro B'Mashehu Min HaTorah V'Elokin Olav, that if you know that that wine was offered to Avodah Zarah, then you get your usher min haTorah to eat, to drink even the tiniest drop of it, and if you drink a full shear of it, or a revias of it, then you get malchus min haTorah, you get lashes. Midichsiv velo yidbak biyadcha meuma min haCherem. You should not. I'm sorry. You get malchus even on the smallest amount. I'm sorry. It's not even a full shear. Yeah. Midichsiv velo yidbak biyadcha meuma min haCherem. That it says nothing, absolutely nothing from that stuff that was Avodah Zaradik that you took as spoil, you cannot have any bit of it. So that means, since it says me'uma, it says anything, so that takes it out of the general category of Isurim of the Torah, that there's a shear for that to receive punishment. Rather, you receive the punishment even if you eat the tiniest bit. Uvestam yenam she'en isur ela midivrayam, but regular Goyisha wine is only asur midirabanan, so ein b'chiyuv shtiyah, so ela makas mardos. So then you get the regular rabbinic punishment, which is lashes of rebelliousness, which is, doesn't have the full severity of real biblical lashes for violating a negative commandment. You only get the punishment if you drink a full revias. If you drink less than revias, you don't get a punishment. It's still asur, but you don't get the makas mardos even. That even the tiniest bit is still from, you're forbidden to derive benefit from it, even the tiniest amount. Vovishar dvarim sheba olam chutz miyain loch miru zichronim levracha lesor kol animtza biyodam bistam mipnei chashash tigrovus avodah zarah el chashash avodah zarah atzma. If you regular goyisha products, you don't have to assume that there's something associated with avodah zarah in this goyisha product. It's only specifically wine. Zulosi bidvarim shem nikar shehem asom lachach. But if you know that there's a certain product that they do use for worshiping avodah zarah, then you have to be worried about it. Kiyon mashom zichronim levracha binyan hatzlomim. That, let's say you have a statue, shestam aslamim lavodah zarah yasum, that at least in those days when a goy made a statue was normally to worship. So if you found a statue lying around, then you're not allowed to derive benefit from the statue, unless lufikach asro osam, they asked any statues at all. Afil hamotzi osam ushlochem ein arasha, let me find one in the garbage, you're not allowed to take it and derive benefit from it, because you still assume that it's still worshipped as avodah zarah, even though it's in the garbage. Kiim b'tanayim yiduim, there's certain, for example, if you find it smashed up or something like that, so it's obvious that the goy stopped worshipping it as avodah zarah, then you're allowed to derive benefit from it, because we know there's a principle that if a goy is worshipping avodah zarah, and then he declares that this is no longer avodah zarah, he says, ah, I want to stop worshipping this, this is not my deity, then it becomes un-avodah zarah, as opposed to a Jewish avodah zarah, that if a Jew worships avodah zarah, then the thing becomes usur b'hana forever.
Or a statue of Zeus or something like that, obviously, yeah. At this point.
Right, yeah. Kemosha Pershohem Zichronim Levracha, Vechein Nira Bevadai, Bechol Dabar Sheyisrael Choshev, Shenasa Vatikroves, Sheasar Lo Lelokomeyan. But the same thing that we don't assume, like in wine, we don't assume. I mean, for wine, we do assume, but for other things, we don't assume. But if you know that it's likely, or you think, or you're leaning towards the fact that they probably did use this for Avodah Zarah, then you're not allowed to take, let's say, pickle juice or any other product in the world. That the reason that wine is singled out for its severity is because wine is something that's a major part of the worship, and it brings happiness, and another reason, of course, is that you don't want Jews and non-Jews to get too close, that if they start drinking wine together, then they're going to start socializing more. Wine is considered more the most social type of beverage. That the Torah mentioned wine explicitly. So since the Torah mentioned wine explicitly, so the sages are going to derive inspiration from that they should be more stringent, they should make their own restrictions more stringently about wine than about other products. They drink the wine of their libations. And since it says wine specifically, so it's more stringent. That's why they're they acted more stringently about it. That in additional stringency, shafilu, not only wine of goyish provenance is aser, but shafilu yain shel Yisrael miyad shiiga bo hagoy yehei aser afilu bahana. That even Jewish wine that has completely Jewish made from the beginning, even if the goy touches the wine, then it becomes us, or even Bahana, even to derive any benefit from the wine, even though they didn't make it at all. It's very unlikely that they used it for Avodah Zarah. If they just, you know, took your cup and took a sip, it's extremely unlikely. But still, since it's so severe, then we have this additional stringency.
Deriving benefit, so maybe giving it to a guy afterwards is not allowed, because you gain some benefit, like a relationship or something.
Right, so nowadays, actually, the Rama Paskins, that since Goyim, in fact, do not normally worship their idols or deities or whatever by actually pouring libation, so it's mutter bahana. And the Rambam's other poskim say like this, not exactly like that, but they say if the Gentile does not worship Avodah Zarah, but let's say a Muslim or something like that, then the wine is only Asur Beshtia, you're only not allowed to drink it, but you're not still allowed to derive benefit from it. So that's what people rely on, Jews who own wine stores and they sell non-Jewish wine, so they all rely on this.
Like this.
Yeah?
What
about it?
Like, if a guy touched a Jewish wine, that's not mavashal.
You can't.
It's aser bahana, so then maybe you can do it.
Yeah, but only if they're, according to the way we paskin, it's only if they're of the Avodah Zarah.
Okay. So if you have a non-Jewish waiter pours, wine.
Right. Okay,
then a non-Jewishal wine.
Yeah.
Then you're allowed to drink it or not. I think you're not.
You're not. Right, it's not if he's not an Oved Avodah Zarah, or according to the Rama.
Okay. It's the Shtia, but not, okay.
Right.
You could sell it still.
Right, you could sell it still, exactly. Now, it's very interesting the way the Chinuch phrases this prohibition. He says, so it's very interesting the way the Chinuch phrases it over here, because he says, wine of Goyisha provenance is Usur, and Jewish wine that a Goy touched is also Usur because it's so severe, which implies that the real Isser, the original Isser, is that they made the wine. And sort of an ancillary thing, the touching the wine issue. But people think nowadays that it's the touching the wine that causes the issur, but that's not true. That's why there's the famous story about how when the conservative rabbinate came out with their tshuva permitting people to consume all types of wine nowadays, even without a hechsher, because all the machinery is automated, so none of the goyim actually touch the wine. So one day, apparently, Rav Soloveitchik was reading an article about this in the newspaper, and he burst into laughter. So somebody said, Rebbe, why are you laughing? So he pointed to the article, and apparently he was laughing so hard he couldn't even explain why he was laughing. So he, his son-in-law, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, explained why his father-in-law was laughing so hard, which is that it's ridiculous. The Isser has nothing, if it's a Gentile-produced wine, that's the original Isser. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with if they touch it or not. Touching is only if it's a Jewish wine that they touch afterwards. So that's why wine nowadays still needs hechsher. Of course, this does not apply to certain situations of Jewish wine which cannot become usher. One is if it's yain mevushal, because we consider that cooked wine, if it's since it's not normally used in worship of God, even in terms of worship in the Beis Hamikdash, we had to use non mevushal wine for it to pour on the mizbeach. So we assume that goyim also don't want to use mevushal wine for their services as well. So therefore, if the wine is mevushal, so you don't have to be concerned that if the goy touches it. Of course, that doesn't mean that if the goy takes the wine, the mevushal wine, and says, "I'm pouring this for Zeus or whatever," that it is usher. We just don't have to assume that they would do such a thing if the wine is a mevushal. And of course, there's a huge machlokas about what constitutes mevushal for these purposes. The minhag in America is really to follow Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein basically just said if you heat the wine up to Yad Soled Espo, heat it to, I don't know what he considered Yad Soled Espo for the purpose of like 160? I don't remember exactly, but at a certain point where it doesn't really affect the wine at all, he still considered the halachically, it doesn't matter if wine is mevushal, so they're not going to use it for these purposes, and you don't have to be concerned if they touch it. Whereas in Eretz Yisrael, the postgame are generally more stringent about this. In Eretz Yisrael, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Rav Yoshev, both said that the wine actually had to be heated to the level that if some of it would already start evaporating. So
89 degrees centigrade. I just had a bottle. Yesterday I had a bottle of Spanish wine, a bushel at 89 degrees centigrade, and it was
You could really tell the difference.
Let's put it this way: it obviously hadn't aged any.
Uh huh.
And when they heat up that high, it doesn't stop the aging process.
Mm.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Red, and I could have used it. Yeah.
Yeah, some of the hecherim actually put on the container, the bottle of wine, mevushal, whatever, like in French, they write, on 89 degrees. Mm-hmm. So I thought 89 is even, according to some, it's even not enough 89. There is a one, also Kedem wines, by the way, the hecher, the Rav HaMachshir, the Tzela Marav. Mm-hmm. was one of the pioneers of what we call Mahadran Kashrus in America. Did a lot of good work in his time, but he was stringent in order to be considered Mevushal. It had to, actually had to boil literally. So he holds
89 degrees centigrade probably would cause a mixture of, say, 13% alcohol to boil.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Because it lowers the... You know,
right, so maybe not 212, but I think he held one. It was much higher than Rav Moshe Feinstein's share. Anyway, but the, so if you... The Kedem wines that say Mevushal on the bottle, mm-hmm. those are Mevushal according to just about everyone, unless there... It may also be an opinion that there has to actually be a tangible reduction in the quality of the wine. So that pretty much no wine adheres to, but that we don't... But in America, I'm saying we really the normal practice is in accordance with Rav Moshe Feinstein that even if something is pasteurized or something like that, so then it would be considered mevushal. Of course, the problem with the Kedem wines is that if you want davka non-mevushal wine for some reason, then you can't rely on it if it says non-mevushal on the bottle, because what it means is non-mevushal in accordance with a tzelem or rav.
Oh.
So according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, actually according to Rav Moshe Feinstein, all Kedem wines are mevushal because they're actually all pasteurized. So if you want specifically non-mevushal wines, so you have to get a different brand. So I remember someone was upset about this because they wanted davka non-mevushal wine for Kiddush or something, so they were using Kedem wines that said not Mevushal for years, and I found out about this with a complaint to Rabbi Ganak, the head of the OU, because it's the main actually was the Tel Amarav, but they also have the OU because not everybody recognizes they don't trust it, but they don't they look at they see Tel Amarav, who's the Tel Amarav, they don't know who it is, so they have the OU also give a hechsher so that it's a more recognizable symbol on the package. So they asked Rabbi Ganak about this. He said, yeah, Taka, you know, he'd prefer if they would write not Mevushal according to the Tzelem HaRav, but he says, you know, he doesn't want to fight with them about this. This is not something that he wants to pick his fights. Also, if it's a closed bottle, then we do not assume, it's called, the Rambam presents, it says, Ein derech nisuch b'chach. It's not normal to libate a wine in front of a deity in a closed bottle, but that's also only if they don't say anything. You don't have to assume, but if they take the closed bottle and they start shaking it and they say, I want to libate this to Zeus or whatever, then Ataka is also, so that's also something to keep in mind. We just don't have to assume when there's a closed bottle that they did do that. The Rambam also brings an opinion that even because in the Beis HaMikdash we don't use wine, kol se'or v'chol dvash lo saktir menu v'shel Hashem, that we're not allowed to put honey on the altar. So the Rambam brings an opinion that some of the rabbis in Spain held that if you mix a little bit of honey into the wine, so you can no longer use it for Kiddush, because it's not what we call royal nasach al gabi amizbech. We're not able to use it on the altar, so therefore it's connected to the lechos of Kiddush. You know, you have to make Kiddush on wine that's that you're allowed to pour on the altar. The exact parameters that are on debate, but he also says that if a goy touches that wine, will not create stamianum. But that's not the accepted opinion, to say at least. That's certainly not the accepted. You ask the question, it's our wine, what do you mean? They can't just asur our wine. We normally assume that someone can't asur somebody else's thing. That's not fair. That's talking about if you don't do any action on the thing. So, for example, if you bow down to your neighbor's cat and say you worship it as an avodah zarah, then it doesn't aser the cat because, what do you mean? It's my cat. You can't just aser my cat. Aval kolzman shiaseh maisa beguf adavar afilo maisa muat ki hai denigia. But if they do a maisa, if they do an action that's on the thing, then they can aser it. So if they touch our wine, if they do an action on the wine, then they can aser it even though it's ours.
Pick your cat up,
then you have a problem. I don't know if they pick it up. He'll get into it in a second. Yishol koach lesor shalom midrabanan. That's midrabanan. They have that little action is even enough to create an iser. Shech mir v'davar, because they're stringent about all of the zardika things. Avalo midoraisa shias a maise godol. They have to do a really big action on the thing, such as don shchitas v'hema shu maise godol. So if they shecht your cat for as a sacrifice to a deity, then that would be also me
d'oraisa. Are you going to get out of it anymore?
I don't know. You want to tell it? I don't know. You want to feed it? V'chein im nisei chayayin lifnei avodah zarah mamish gam ze ma'aseh gadol. So if the goy actually took the wine, brought it, your own personal non-Jewish wine, and poured it in front of his deity, then that would also be asur mida oraisa. Aval negia shelo bifnei avodah zarah ma'ase mu'atu. But if he just stirs the wine with his finger and says l'shem zeus or whatever, then that would not be asur mida oraisa. Mikaven shu mu'at ve'nisur elu mida rabbanan. Since it's only rabbinical prohibition, he tiro zichronim livracha litol tashlum ma'ase asur miyad ha'oser. He can sue the goy in court in Beis Din and demand restitution for this bottle of wine that he asur. That actual thing that he asked is still forbidden to derive any benefit from it. They weren't stringent to the extent that you can't even be paid for the damage that he caused. It's just like paying for the damage that he caused you. It's not directly getting benefit from the item that was damaged. Just being made restitution, that's all. Even though it's an indirect damage, it doesn't cause any tangible damage, and still, when somebody has the intention to do it, and it causes you damage, even though it doesn't cause any actual physical damage to the object, they're still liable to make restitution. Halachically, not physically, metaphysically. V'chein hechmiru zichronim livracha harbei berichuk yayin shenis nasech mamish l'avodah zarah o b'chol davar shumei avodah zarah yosir mikol yisurin shebatara. So the sages were more stringent regarding this wine that was libated to avodah zarah, or avodah zarah itself, more than any other isur in the Torah. She'ein lach davar she'asur b'hanah b'chol ha'torah shenis arah behetor v'einenu nikr. So all other things that are forbidden to derive benefit from them and the rest of the laws of the Torah that were mixed with something that's permissible and is not recognizable anymore, so the rules of bittul apply. Not the rules of bittul apply necessarily, that also we'll get to a little bit later. So there's some way to derive benefit from the huge mixture. How? Even if it's completely mixed together, it's like one liquid into another liquid, that it's completely mixed together, and really, Tarav is Yavish, but Yavish is generally more lenient in many things. When there's two dry things that get mixed together, then it's generally more lenient than when you have wet things that get mixed together.
More separable,
and so you go according to the majority instead of when it's Lach Balach, and you have to go according to Shishim in terms of just regular things. Like if you have one piece of non-kosher meat that gets mixed in with a few pieces of kosher meat, then it goes according to majority. If you have majority kosher meat, then you're allowed to eat all the pieces of meat. Question whether one person can eat all of them or at the same time or not. That's a question, but still, technically, all three pieces of meat, three or more pieces of meat are allowed to be eaten. But if you have, as we know, the normal rules, if you have basar b'cholov or something like that, then you have to, it's batal b'shishim. Ima she'ama Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel b'gemara, Rabban Shimon Gamliel tells us, she'imacher kulo lagoyim chutz midmei ha'isur shebo. Now you sell the entire mixture to a goy, but you would subtract, when the sale price, the amount that this thing that is forbidden to derive benefit from is. It has to be something that Jews are not allowed to buy from goyim, because if Jews are allowed to buy from goyim, then the goyim might say, hey, I have this thing, and I'll sell it to a Jew. But if you know that you're not allowed to buy it from goyim, then it's okay.
So what's an example? Just like the wine?
Wine is a good example. There are other products, fish products, anything. It's not a sorban. Oh, okay, fine, but...
You can't buy fish from a guy?
Not without skin on it, for example. Okay. That's not a sorban, but you have a fish that's a sorban because they, worship the Avodah Zarah with a fish, something like that. But if it's real, d'oraisa yeinesech, so it does not have, you cannot do this. You have to throw away the whole thing. Certainly, you can't just derive as much benefit as you want, and you take the amount that the asur b'hana, the yeinesech costs, and you throw it into the sea, and you get rid of that money. There's a certain other isurim that does work, but not for yeinesech. That's d'oraisa yeinesech. Even the tiniest drop. It's a huge container. Who dinze she'ain takana la'nasul olam? So then it does. You can't get any benefit from the entire mixture forever. This arav benu chavis achas b'chavios acheros. But if one barrel or amphora, whatever it is, and the Mishnah means amphora, but in modern Hebrew means barrel. If you have one container of kosher wine mixed with of non-kosher wine mixed of really in as mixed with other containers b'chavios acheros shel yain kosher with Jewish wine. Since the actual Isser itself, the wine, was not mixed with the other wine, it was just the containers, and each one is standing independently, So then you could, in that case, you could sell all 10 barrels to the to goyim, and you just subtract the amount of money that one barrel would cost, and you're all good. For stamiyanim, so Rabban Shimon Gamliel does work that you could sell them all. That if even if the wine itself gets mixed in with kosher wine, then you could sell it to a non-Jew and subtract the amount of money that that little bit of wine would cost. So it's more lenient because it's only the Rabbanan. So therefore, you can sell, you can derive benefit in that, not from the mixture, but not from the actual wine itself. Additionally, shikol yisurin shabatora shosurin tarovtam bahanoa ain osurin osan elim kain yeshuin haisur shinasara beheter bichdei nasinas tam beheter. That for the rest of the is the dinim in the Torah where we say specifically that they're osur bahanoa, you're not allowed to derive benefit from them, and they get mixed in with something that's mutter. So we normally have the shear of nesinas tam. That would give that if you could taste the non-kosher thing or the thing you can't derive a benefit from, then it's a problem. And if not, then it is okay. But there are you can estimate. We assume that if it's 1 in 60, then if it's less than 60, then it's not going to give tam. Zulasi imiya oso iser davar chashuv. Unless that particular thing is a very chashuv thing. Ki called davar chashuv and chasicha ruli hiskabed b'chayotze ba osrin b'cholshein. That if it's a, let's say, a nice piece of meat that you would serve to guests, then that does not, the rules of bittul do not apply. So we have this case in general, in regular kashrus, where let's say you have a piece of non-kosher meat that was, let's say you that was mixed with other pieces of meat. So that only applies when it's scraps that you would put in cholin. But if it's nice steaks that are mixed in with each other, then you're not allowed to eat any of them, because it's not, if it's chashuv, it's an important zach, so it's not going to be batal. Aval kol she'eino davar chashuv eino osur tarovto bahanoa elim kein yebuch de nesinas tam. If it's not an important thing, then it has to have nesina, it has to be 1 in 60th approximately. Kemo she'amarnu chutz mi'enesech v'chol inyani yevul yazara she'osurim emashu bahanoa kol she'nesare v'imohem. So this, so Yenesech and all the Avodah Zarah things are b'mashehu because of lo pasuk says explicitly lo yidbak biyadcha me'uma min acherim, anything Avodah Zarah you cannot eat or have derived benefit from. Bein shum davar acher ba'olam yotze miklal zeh. There's nothing else that is not included in this principle. Chutz mikilei hakerem ve'orla ve'chametz v'pesach ladask tzas mefarshim, that these things. The forbidden mixtures having to do with the vineyard and the fruit of the first 3 years of the tree's life, and some say chametz with Pesach. Shenosrin b'hanot taroftan be'achadu masayim bein b'minam bein shelo b'minam. So the Minchas Chinuch doesn't like this. He says that it's a scribal error. He doesn't understand what he's talking about, because if it's a, he says that for orla and kilei kerem, if it's a taroves min b'sheino mino, that if it gets mixed in with something that's not the same type of species, it just, let's say you drop a half an orla grape into a pot of soup or something like that, then it's only b'tzbaltel b'shisha normally. It's only min b'mino that you have these issues of bittul. Shein asur b'tarovton be'echadu masayim bein b'mino bein shalom b'mino. So that is 1 and 201. And truma ola be'echadu mea. And truma and certain and sacrifices ola are 1. And it could be, is not sure. Not sure, it's very, the mefarshim aren't sure what the Sefer Chinuch means over here, whether he's talking about that truma ola, that ola is the verb of which truma is the subject, or truma and sacrifices, ola is a type of sacrifices. What is our scroll? How does he machria? It says 1 in 101, not 1 in 60, 1 in 61, whatever. Actually, the law of 201 applies only in mixtures of their own kind. The mixture is not of their own kind. The law is that they run the mixture, but only the impure flavor. Okay, that's what he said. What Chinuch means here is that they are mixed not into their own kind, and there is no idolater available to taste the mixture. So I guess you can. It's not considered hana if you ask the guy to taste the mixture and determine whether flavor was imparted, then we require 200 parts of permitted substance in order to permit the mixture. Again, he says also the chametz of Pesach, the das tzas mefarshim, obviously we don't pass like that, as Horswell points out, that we assume that it's also a very minute, even the most minute amount of chametz of Pesach will answer the entire mixture. Bahana. What does he say about truma ola? All he says is, same line as the truma, he does not bring the thing about in Ola at all, or not, he does not even mention that. Well, the Inyan, Truma, obviously, you don't need a goy to taste it, you got the Kohen taste it, if a Kohen is is Tahor or whatever. Well, Inyan HaTakana, Sheish Lem Kvar Amarnu, Kilchol HaYisur, and Yesh Takana, but Takana, so Rebin Shimmi Gamliel, everything you can have the, you can sell it to a goy, and except subtracting the amount that the Saftas Asur Bano is worth. Chutz Mikol Yisur Avod Azar, Shizar Gufo Yisur Mamesh, Ein Lo Shum Takana L'Olam, that his neck can never be fixed. Bezo Michomer Avod Azar, again, because Avod Azar is so stringent. Vafuch, Vafuch, Bagimara, keep learning the Gemara very well, as Rabbi Schwartz and his Talmidim are doing on Shabbos afternoons. Ki kol ze timtza ba mevorim ha-perushim ha-tovim, you learn the good commentaries on the Gemara, and you'll figure all this out. Ushmor ha-dvarim ki bahar be-mekomos v'talmud titztarech aleyam al-kein arachti bahen shloke min hagi be-kutreis in elu. I've talked about this at much greater length than I normally do, because I want you to know this when you're learning the Gemara, so I want you to know my opinion about the matter. V'odhir chikuni zechonim l'rocha mi-isur yeinesech lomar shafilu schar shal yeinesech yasur bana, that even if you... the goy hires you to work in his wine press, so that's also the money that he pays you is also asur. Gam ifligu brichu kolomar shafilu aniskar lishbor chavios yenesach, that even if you, the goy pays you to get rid of his wine, to throw it in the garbage, to smash the amphora or smash the barrel, and the wine will go down the drain because he doesn't want it for some reason. So even in that case, shescharu asur mibneishu rotsa bekiumos man muat, that at a certain point. That you want the barrels, oh yay, I get money for this, so I want the barrels to be whole, and I want the wine to be there until I go and smash it. So that's, since you want the Yeinesach to exist, you're happy about it for a little while, then this schar is still asur. Kilomar shorotzi yakayim hayayim b'chavios ha-shishbrem, you want to be the one to smash it. You should say, oh, halavai, that all the Yeinesach should go down the drain. You want to get paid. Chazal wanted to get out of our minds that we like Avodah Zarah Dika wine, even for the tiniest second. Because we are disgusted completely with all types of Avodah Zarah. This is in brackets. It's not in all the manuscripts, apparently. So the answer to that is... That you should break them, and then because you're still getting rid of the ma'isa, you're still getting rid of the yeinesach. And I'm not, so he's undoing what he said before. What is our?
No, isn't he?
Be'eser protel harabim, at least in Eretz Yisrael, you have to. Be'eser protel harabim, the rest of the many details of this mitzvah can go in mi'ose yeinesach, loser alfil ba'ano. We discussed that a little bit already. That's a goy who's not Ovid Avodah Zarah, according to some. According to our minag, really, that the Ramah presents, that it's even if somebody, if the goyim don't generally worship their deities by pouring wine in general, mi oser b'shtia davka, but obviously all goyim aser wine by to drink, if they either produce it or they touch our wine, u'meim asay nasa yinesech, that's when it becomes wine, so goyim are completely fine to, they're allowed to handle grapes, for example, it's only when they actually get crushed that the prohibition of yinesech or istam hinam begins. V'dini mago shel goy b'chavona v'shelo b'chavona. There's another halacha that if the goy touches the wine without knowing that it's wine or doesn't really know what he's doing, then it cannot asar it bahana. And according to some, if he's not an avodah zarah and he touches it without any intention whatsoever, according to some, that's also mutter b'shtia. They're even allowed to drink it, but we don't really...
Like if you have a housekeeper and they just like move the bottle to clean.
Right, that happens a lot, actually. That if the housekeeper just moves the bottle to clean and she's not in avodah zarah, or he... according to some, you could still drink it. V'chocho, v'choach kocho, v'siyua Yisrael imo. So, for example, not even if the goy doesn't exactly touch the wine, but he pours the wine, so that's also a problem. Also, it has to be, they're very interesting halachas, by the way, that he has to move the wine, swish it around a little bit, but... But even if an Ovid Avodah Zarah, for example, if he sticks his hand in a container of wine, and the Jew sees him immediately and grabs his hand and immobilizes it, and then breaks the wine on the, somehow, like, drains it out of the bottom of the container without the goy moving the wine at all, then it's still usur, it's mutter bahana. Not mutter b'shtia, but it's mutter bahana. Ve'ezo shmira taspik lanu b'yeinenu b'beiso shel goy o b'veisenu yisham goy o b'karon v'yiniach sham goy. So how exactly do you prevent, let's say the goyim hanging around, so how do you prevent the wine from becoming usur? Ki on ha'nichnas v'ayotzei shemutter hayayin. So if the Jew, there, it depends how easy access, for all these things, it depends how easy access the Goy has to the wine. And if it's really in the Jew's house, then as if he's just coming in and out, the Goy obviously knows he's not supposed to be touching wine. If he's coming in and out, so the Goy's going to be afraid. So then the wine is also, in many cases, whereas us are, depending on many details that don't come up nowadays of exactly how easy access the Goy has to the wine, and if he's living together in a courtyard, or I'm sure it's in the Jew's house, then as long as I have Goyim don't know they're not allowed to touch wine, so it doesn't help. But if he knows that he's not allowed to touch wine, then if the Jew's going in and out, then it's okay. But if you leave the wine in a Goy's house, for example, as a pikadon, if you say, please wash my wine, or let's say, for example, in the common case, is if the manufacturer bottles it and then wants to sell it to a store, and then anybody could buy it. So we have to have what's called a chosam bitso chosam. You have to have two seals. So there's a principle in halacha that things that are asur midrabanan, if they're completely in a goy's control and the Jew wants to eat them afterwards and make sure they're still kosher, so they need one seal. And something that's asur midaraisa, like meat or fish or something like that, fish without skin, and there's no identifying mark, then you need two seals.
Put the plastic over the cork.
So I'm going to get to that in a second. I'm going to get to that. Very good. But wine is the same. It needs two seals, even though it's probably only asur midrabanan in most cases, even if the goy would actually touch it. So that's why, for example, a wine, we assume, by the way, that even though in the time it's referred to as chosam beso chosam, that a seal inside another seal, we don't assume that what Chazal meant when they told us that is it has to do with a number of seals. It doesn't have to do with a number of seals, it has to do with how hard is it to forge. So, for example, that's why you'll find chicken, if you find a package of factory packaged Empire chicken, they don't have two seals around it, but what they do is they have a shrink-wrapped container that's imprinted with logos, and it'd be so impossible to forge. What goy is going to spend the time that they couldn't forge it if they spent a month with the machinery, trying to build machinery to do it? Just who's going to forge it? So if it's mamish, like, you never assume they would have to forge it, that's considered two chosamos, and if it's somewhat easy to forge, but probably they're not going to take the effort to do it, that's considered one chosam. But that's, you see, a lot of times, I'm not so happy with the seals the way things are going. But if in a wine, the way wine is packaged for the two seals is the cork, basically it would be considered one seal. Yeah, even though cork you could technically take in and out and
without piercing the cork. Like, you could take it out and put
like
the cork in.
You could have they have cork screws that go on the side, like they're little they're tweezer like things.
Put another cork in. The cork itself is marked by the mirrors.
Right. Normally, you could tell even if that when a cork is fresh and it has a nice pop, or when they're that's wet on the bottom, you could tell when a cork is fresh and when it's not fresh. And then you have the
capsule
on the top. Then that's considered to be two chosamos. The problem is a lot of times it's not really the way it should be done. Is that both the cork and the capsule should be imprinted with a hechsher, so that it's going to be illegal and the guy is not going to forge it. And it should be, especially, the cork should be, in like it's supposed to be in. And the capsule should be tight on the neck of the bottle so that you cannot get it off without destroying it. So that's the way it should be. But you see a lot of times in wines, it's not that way. They're either the hechsher, they don't have, some wines with the best hechsherim, they just have a plain cork, no identifying features, not even the winery, nothing. So the plain cork, and then the capsule is sometimes it's very easy to take off and just put it back. So that's not really correct. I guess the heter b'dieved is that we would assume that since the wine bottle has a label on it, even though that does nothing because you could just refill the bottle, since the wine bottle has a label and you could tell that it hasn't been opened, then no goy is going to, nowadays, who's gonna forge it?
There are very stringent laws against refilling any bottled alcoholic beverage.
I'm sure, but that doesn't mean somebody's going to obey them. I mean, right, that's b'dieved, again, we would assume that even... I think it's not correct. B'dieved, I think you're still allowed to drink it, but I think that it's not correct. I think the kosher wine factory should make sure that at least if it's an all kosher wine factory, then it should have the... If there's just the name of the winery is probably sufficient, but if it's, for example... It's a lot of times they're better about this, by the way, just for this reason. And let's say there's a kosher run of a fancy French wine... But there'll be the Hechsher, or say Kosher LePesach or something on the cork and on the capsule, because it's a very easy to get
well,
mixed up.
And it's also that cheese companies,
yeah,
they're not exclusively kosher.
Yeah.
The OU insists on having a holographic OU on the label.
Yeah, so that's good.
Is that wine?
Yep.
That's good for cheese because that's only one seal. But you see in wine bottles also a lot of times, there's one brand of wine where it's a Goyesha wine company and they have a kosher run. And it does say kosher on the cork, but the capsule, I believe, does not say kosher. And the OU has a hologram stuck on the bottle. Mm-hmm. So why does that help? That's no better than the label of the bottle. The hologram, where the hologram should be, is on the point of connection between the capsule and the bottle, so that you couldn't take it off without breaking the hologram. So I'm not sure what exactly they benefit with that. But a lot of the hakbados about chosambas nowadays are not so good. I have to tell you.
You have trouble opening that Shabbos though.
Okay, you could break the capsule around the top. You don't have to, but yeah, even meat is also not good. A lot of times, is not so good. You go to some stores, and you have a plain shrink wrapped package of meat, and you have a label slapped on top. So maybe that's one chosam, even though technically you could open the package. But okay, so you wouldn't destroy the. Goy wouldn't forge that type of thing anyway, but that's really only one chosam for something for meat and things like that. It should really be something that's very unique to the thing and very not forgeable. Like I said, like the packages of Empire Chicken, that it's the whole shrink wrap thing is printed with Empire's logo. So that's really, I've been meaning to bring this up for a while to some HM. I really think they're not as makbid on the seals as they should be at all. Again, b'dievet, it could be it's okay, but l'chatchila, it's certainly not proper.